Hey, everybody. Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this episode 5 of season 4 of The Amazing Race Canada. My name is Jessica Leese, and I am here to navigate you through the logjam that is this episode. And here with me, as always, is my venerated co-host, Mr. Dan Heaton. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jess. I'm feeling like a prophet, though, because my prediction of Kelly and Kate being out in July amazingly was correct after some good weeks. But a little sad about my fantasy team, but I'm doing good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed with your prophetic abilities. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, I guess they just do really well when they're not actually in Canada.
Apparently so. And, you know, they're like the opposite of Gino and Jesse.
If only we could do The Amazing Race Canada in other countries, they would be great. But, you know, we will get to that. I don't feel like they were so bad. I really think it was, again, like we talked about, the killer task, the one task that they could not do, which was a puzzle.
Yep. And who knew it would be a puzzle? I guess it's good they weren't on Survivor.
Yeah, they would have always been the people not volunteering to do the puzzle, because if they did, they would look very confused like tonight. But I thought it was a good episode, you know, back in Canada. So that's fun. People seem jazzed up about it. What do you think?
Well, I have to say, this is another one of those locations, and I consider myself no slouch in the geography department. But this was one of those like, huh, that's what that island is called. Okay. I had never actually heard of Haida Gwaii, so I'm sure this paints me even more of a non-Canadian here. But I thought it was so great to hear about a corner of the world that I could probably have found it on a map if you said it's like the little piece of British Columbia that's like right south of Alaska. But this is a location. This is a spectacular location.
Yeah, and that, I think that's the real highlight of the episode, even more than the tasks, which some of them were good, but it was just the location and how gorgeous it was. I mean, they get them up in the air on a plane. You know, the show knows what it's doing. When it has a really pretty location, we're going to fly over it because it's worth it. It's amazing. In this location, though, when seeing it, like in certain parts, I thought, they probably went here a few times when they were shooting maybe the X-Files or like Stargate or one of those shows when we needed an alien planet, maybe on Stargate, that looked this way. I'm thinking they maybe made the jump from Vancouver over here.
Yeah, it definitely looked like the Ewok planet.
Yeah, well, it happened to be, though, that I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here, but like on certain shows that are set in Vancouver, not as much the X-Files, but others, they do, when they go to certain planets, they all seem to have similar vegetation. And some of them look like this. I have not done my research, but some of them look like Haida Gwaii.
It's true. But on the other hand, if they'd filmed a lot of stuff in Haida Gwaii, we probably would have heard of it before now.
Yeah, that is true, because you don't hear a lot about, you know, TV shows or even movies going there, because honestly, I was not very familiar, really at all familiar with it. And so that was the highlight for me, was just seeing this episode and being like, wow, that looks like an amazing place to go. You know, like almost everywhere this show seems to be in Canada, I have a long list that's growing, but this especially just looked really pretty.
How amazing is it that we're 4 seasons in and we're still doing 80% of our episodes in Canada, and Amazing Race Canada keeps surprising us with locations this amazing?
Yeah, I mean, it's good because you could easily get to a point, you know, I'm sure, you know, that they're going to repeat more as we go. But it's really cool that you just have these, you know, it's not just like, and now we go here again and we'll do something different, or we'll go here and do something different. Even in the U.S. version where they go all around the world, they end up, I didn't mean to enunciate so much there, but when they go all around the world, they repeat places a lot. So the fact that they're keeping it fresh is impressive.
Yeah, Amazing Race US is like, how many times are you going to end the show in Los Angeles or New York?
A lot of times.
All of the
that,
times.
That is now the answer to your rhetorical question. But yeah, it was good. I mean, I feel like I wasn't as like gung-ho about every task this week as I was last week, but that also could be a case where I feel like, one, we didn't even have a detour this week, which was interesting, but that last week I was just so enjoying everything about it that it's bound to come back a little bit this time. And also, it was pretty obvious pretty early on who was getting eliminated, but all things considered, if this is a middle of the road episode, I will take it.
Yeah, I'd say the middle of the road episode is still better than a lot of episodes of other seasons of the show.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say middle of the road. If this is, to me, because, you know, if this is on the lower end of this season, this is a really good season.
Yeah, I think so far we've had a really excellent time getting to know all these racers and seeing the route that's been planned out. I think there's really very little to complain about. So I guess let's just kick things off by we're going to land in a town called Sandspit, and I have to imagine that any town that ends with the word spit, like, that's not going to be a bustling metropolis.
Yeah, you're usually on the outskirts there, which was definitely the case for this, which, again, it was cool to do that. They got in their Chevy Volts, which we had two different Chevys that they get to pick from. Now, Jess, if you won the Amazing Race Canada, would you consider the Chevy Volt as your car?
I would definitely consider the Chevy Volt, because that's some good gas mileage you're getting, like 0 miles to the gallon, infinite miles to the gallon. I think the electric car is a great thing, and I hear good things about the Chevy Volt. The Corvette might be tempting, especially since apparently you get to make lots of vroom vroom noises.
Do you think those were added to the Corvette? Like they did some extra. They didn't always sound like that the whole time.
I'm pretty sure those were added in. But I thought it was a little cheap that pretty much they landed in one place and drove one car, got on a ferry, and then got on a different car. Like, that was pretty much the whole reason to do that, was to get another car in there.
Yeah, it would have been nice if somehow they could use it. I mean, granted, I'm not asking for the, you know, hit you over the head, the Chevy Volt's amazing kind of thing, because we've had that with, you know, the put your foot and open the trunk thing or something. You know, we've had that in the past with some blatant product placement, but I would have liked to, if you're going to have them drive a car and do it, let's let them do it for a little while and not just say, oh, there's that car, we got the Volt out of the way, now let's get out the cool car.
Yeah, it really felt like the Volt, especially like sandwiching it in there with the Corvette, it really was meant to show, like, look, you can drive this awesome car that all the cool kids have, or you can have the nerd car. And we're doing our due diligence, because Chevy won't let us have them as a sponsor if we don't profile all of their cars. So this is our due diligence. This is the car we have to show you. And now here's the car we want to show you.
And not to get off on that tangent, but I found it interesting, because I was like, oh, the Volt, that's cool, they're going to use that. Oh, well, we saw a couple of cars drive onto the ferry and that was pretty much it. But there was so much to show. You know, we're getting into the roadblock right off the bat, which connected nicely to the culture, I thought.
Yeah, I thought this was a great way to kick things off. And it's an interesting way to profile the Pacific Northwest in a way that they haven't done yet.
Yeah. And I like the fact, though, too, that it was an interesting task, because it was, you know, you had to listen to a story. So, and it connected directly to the culture, but also in on its own, the task was kind of hard. So it wasn't something that just, like, you know, a lot of times they'll do that where, you know, and they'll say, and now you're going to watch a little dance, or you're going to watch something cultural, and then you'll go do this other task. This was like both of them wrapped into one. And as we saw, teams struggled.
They definitely did. This kind of brought about a lot of working together, which I thought was very interesting. The way that teams kind of bunched together. And I want to get your take on this, because we saw three racers immediately right off the bat. You guys all want to work together, not even taking a minute to consider, are we at the front of the pack or at the back of the pack? Let's just do this all in a group.
It's interesting. I mean, I guess if you're going to work together, and we saw this some last season where it seemed like you would have five teams working together and stuff, which I thought we talked about, I remember being very strange. The one thing is, if you're going to do it, I guess, early in the leg, it's not as crucial as if this was right in front of the pit stop. But it did seem like, you know, I guess if you have three teams that work together and you're really smart and you say, I'll take these, you take these. And we had a listener mention this. I'll take these. It would work out very well. But these three just seem to be like, let's work together. Let's all do it. And maybe one of us will get it.
Yeah, that was, I mean, if you are the one to get it, you got to feel kind of crappy about the fact that you pretty much any advantage you gained from being good at the task is going to get completely demolished because you promised you'd help other people.
Right. And we saw that with Julie, where Julie ends up, you know, she gets it. She goes fifth and gets it and then doesn't just leave and helps out. And really with Jillian, especially, I mean, they ended up finishing very high. But I mean, how long would Jillian have been there if Julie does not seem like somebody who would do that, who would just run off or say, oh, you know, like when they ask Amy, I think it was, and she just like kind of ran past them like, woo, and didn't even stop.
Yeah.
Like that's one way to handle being asked, not to look shady or whatever, just to act like you didn't hear them. I mean, maybe she didn't. I'm not sure. But yeah, because Jillian looked like she was in it for the long haul. I mean, yeah, they might have caught up probably with the puzzle or whatnot, but that was really dangerous. And thanks to, you know, some help, it didn't hurt her at all.
Yeah. And I really have to wonder, like, how much that puzzle factored into things, because it seemed like it was a real order mixer, because Jillian and Emmett were at that first roadblock for a while, and Jillian was really not very good at it, might not have gotten out of it without help. And then they blew through that puzzle. They did. It was like a survivor puzzle.
Yeah. And so, yeah, maybe because they being savvy in this way, having done, you know, and I have not seen Big Brother Canada, but having done the competitions, were a little better at something like this. But I think it was one that for the teams that struggled, the puzzle, I think, took a long time, which is why we saw so much of a shakeup.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that something that's such a heavy memory task ends up not being the big shuffler this episode.
Right. Well, it was interesting too, because I have written down like when they arrived, and it wasn't exactly that way, but like Kristen and Ashley and Kate all arrived, you know, in the top five, and they all got out of there pretty quick. It was mainly just Jillian was the one who showed up first and then ended up last. But I also think too, because that was the first task, you would have thought that teams could come out of it in almost any order, but with a few exceptions, it stayed that way. So I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, we did have the bunching with everyone, you know, with the international flight. So that was good. But it did, you know, I found it interesting that, well, I think I'll hold this question, but interesting how they finished and where we're, I think we're starting to see a little delineation in some talents of the teams, but that would be jumping ahead a bit. But what did you think? Do you think the memory task though works out well? Like right up front, we do a roadblock like this. I mean, how did you think the leg was designed? I mean, the leg design, do you think it worked?
I think it was great to kind of throw them into a pressure cooker right away. To kind of, they're hopping presumably right off the flight and into a car and then into a task. And I don't know about you, Dad, but the longest flight I've ever been on has been about 16 hours, and my brain was fried at the end of it. Like, ask me to remember six stories, hold them in my head, and identify a bunch of pictures based on something somebody described. I would have been there all day too. Some people just don't cope with that very well.
Right. And I think that's an underrated skill on The Amazing Race because, yeah, personally, I've been similar, like 10, 12, 13 hours. And, you know, I think I wasn't totally right for a few days or something. And on the race, it's like, I mean, granted, especially when you're going like internet, this, you spend a lot of time in Canada, but still you'll see it with some of the teams where when they go international or when they come back, and we may have seen it a bit with Kelly and Kate, where you just, everything, like the world's moving slow. Like, you know, I'll see it even after a long car ride of 5 hours or something, where everything is just a little bit off. And to do an amazing race, you've got to be one of those people that's just like a business traveler. Like, you know, you have those salespeople that can just take a 5 a.m. flight and at 8 a.m. they're giving a presentation. You almost have to be that kind of person.
Yeah. And I had heard rumors, like back in the day, we had a lot of very early season racers would spend a lot of time in forums engaging with fans. And they dropped a lot of really interesting tidbits about what they would do during the race. And one of the teams in particular said they did very well in the race because they brought Ambien with them, and they would knock themselves out on the flights and be rested when they got off the flights. And I'm sure they don't let anybody do that anymore in the US or Canada, but I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good approach because if you're, the stress of the race is so high, like even if you're exhausted, like I don't sleep on planes well as it is. If I'm stressed out and thinking like, what's the task going to be? What are we going to do? How are we going to get ahead? You'll just never sleep on the race. And we've seen this, that killer fatigue where you have teams who by the end look like they haven't slept for 5 days or something, or
and
something
they probably
crazy.
Haven't.
Right. Or they got an hour here or an hour there. So the skill, I mean, Ambien or other chemically altering substances aside, the skill is really one, being able to shut out, compartmentalize, shut everything out, sleep on planes, sleep on a bus, whatever you need to do, and then power through it. And I think that's where even though Jillian really struggled, you see that, you've seen that a few times with Jillian and Emmett, or even with Steph and Kristen, you know, some of these teams that look like they're a little behind and then just show up at a task and it's like, okay, game on. And you go, whoa, how did that happen? And that's that mindset. And an athlete, for people that are athletes, may have that better than
I definitely agree with that. So there's one other thing that I wanted to talk about at this challenge, which I thought was a really interesting moment. That's kind of a rarity, I think, especially on Amazing Race Canada, but on Amazing Race in general, you don't necessarily, you see people get recognized, but I've never seen an actual person working a task get a little fangirly over somebody. And I thought it was really adorable when the story reader recognized Ashley and just kind of whispered her name and got very excited. I thought this was adorable. I think it's something I'm pretty sure I've never seen someone actually working the task recognize a racer.
Yeah, it was really cute. I mean, just as, you know, she's like, hi, I'm Alex, you know, like after they're done. And I'm not sure, again, because we saw her be very like, you know, on like following the story person. Again, we don't know if that was an insert before she said, hi, I'm Alex. She was very on it. But it was really nice because it almost just like it humanizes the racers. And it also makes the people seem less just like automatons who are like, I am going to read you a story right now and stuff. It humanizes the whole show. So it's fun. But I wonder, too, if it happens every once in a while and that we just never see it, they cut it out of the show, but they just thought, well, this is a cool scene. Let's show it here.
Yeah. And we've seen enough of like locals who aren't necessarily being paid as extras to work a task. We've seen a lot of people get recognized on the street. Like we've seen, I think Brooke and Robbie got a fair amount of that. And, you know, Bethany Hamilton, certainly Robin Amber. If you're a little bit of a celebrity, somebody somewhere is going to know who you are. And even on Amazing Race Canada, I think Body Break got it constantly.
Right. And that's the thing. I remember specifically with Robin Amber because they got people to help them because people are like, oh, my gosh, and helped them. But again, you're right. It was all locals either helping or wanting a picture or just, you know, freaking out. But and you saw it a bit, too, on the obviously with Tyler last season on the U.S. mm-hmm. version, where it seemed like in airports they would show him getting recognized and things, and a few of the other social media stars, but especially with him. But this is different, and it was a fun thing to see. It's basically, you know, and then you see her dad, you see Joel, like, yeah, this happens all the time, you know. I mean, he said it more in like, it's so great because she's Miss Universe and everything, but there was part of it that's kind of like, okay, enough. Yeah, my daughter. Yeah, I know she's amazing. But of course, it's hard to tell because he said it in his calm, call him Joel voice that I like so much.
Yeah, Joel has one voice.
He speaks with one voice, regardless of being proud or stressed, happy, sad. It's all Joel, but hey, it works for the race. They're doing well.
Yeah, they are a force to be reckoned with, and I've been really impressed with the race they've been running so far, because I was firmly convinced they were one of those middle of the pack teams that we wouldn't see a lot of, but they are contenders, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I really should have picked them instead of Anthony and Brandon when I had the pick on our fantasy draft. And my team's just destroyed my team. It's going to be bad news.
2020 hindsight, Dan. You know, everybody's got to have bad picks like this.
Yes, it's very common for me that it happens quite a lot on things like this. But not about me. Let's get back to the important thing, which is the Amazing Race Canada. the second test, this leg, we had two roadblocks, and then we had the third test, the other task, and that's often the hardest one. So in this case, for some people, like we mentioned, puzzle looked easy. It was no problem. But even Steph and Kristen seemed pretty confused at the start. So I don't know. What do you think about having them do puzzles on the Amazing Race?
I think it's kind of a cheap, I think it's a cheap way to shoehorn another task in that is going to be mentally taxing. And I think puzzles, watching other people do a puzzle, is about the least fun thing in the entire universe. So I think from a good TV standpoint, puzzles are not really a great task, but from a pure competition-based racing standpoint, I see why they're in there. I see the point of having them, because otherwise it does end up being almost overwhelmingly physical, and you can't make every task have that mental component. So it's good to have something purely mental, I think. And people that study the show know that they're going to be faced with at least one of these types of tasks, and they should be able to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I see your point, too, because in a sense, you also don't want it to just be go here, go here, go here, detour, roadblock. That's we encourage the Amazing Race Canada to do other tasks. And while a lot of times those other tasks are very clever, you do have to have some where, you know, for money, financial reasons, or just because of what the options are, just let's just do this. Even a lot could be the time. I know this took a while, but it doesn't take as long as driving tugboats and having everyone do it probably, or something like that. And they did try to connect it. I mean, they sent them out, you know, to this old growth forest called the Spirit Lake Trail. They had them recreate works of contemporary art from the area. So at least, you know, we've had worse cases where they did a puzzle or a task where I thought, I don't really understand how this connects in any way, even with the stretch. So here, at least, they did have some connection to the area.
Yeah, they definitely did. And it was, you know, we had some beautiful scenery behind it. And you saw people get more upset over a puzzle than I think I've ever seen anybody get upset over a puzzle.
Right. And I did enjoy, too, Julie was struggling with the puzzle. Or actually, this was earlier. I apologize. I'm jumping back. But I wanted to mention Lowell's great comment. Well, the comment's not that great, but the moment where Lowell said, Julie's memory's gone after having two kids, and Emmett, probably not having kids, had no reply. But that's about stress. That's a different thing. So, you know, different thing. But you're right. It did seem like people just had that, like, you know, we talked about, I mentioned killer fatigue earlier, and I don't think any of these teams are on the, you know, haven't slept in 5 days mode. But you did have that whole thing where everyone just kind of looked at it and their brains just, it's like me trying to put together a like 1,000-piece puzzle where you dump out the pieces and you're like, I don't even know what to do or where to start. They had that I don't know where to start look, especially Kelly and Kate.
Right. It kind of felt like, you know, they make jigsaw puzzles of album covers, right? And one of the jigsaw puzzles you can buy is a 1,000-piece puzzle of the Beatles' White Album.
That's very odd. So it's almost all really, it's like the pieces. You have to know how they all fit. And you've got to have a certain brain for that. And most of us do not.
Most of us do not. And I think if somebody got me that puzzle as a gift, I would stop speaking to them.
Yeah, that would be tough to do. This was not on that level. This did have a system, and once people figured it out, though, again, in terms of the TV watching, it wasn't really that clear totally. I mean, yes, if I rewound it and watched it over and over again, I'm sure I could figure out what the trick was, but it wasn't something where as a viewer, it was like easy to kind of follow what they were doing and their thought process. So the good thing is we didn't spend that much time on this puzzle, which was probably the right move.
Yeah, I think it was probably a good, in real time on the race, I think it was a good way to mix things up and get people using a different part of their brains. But we don't need to see a lot of that, and Amazing Race Canada understands that. So we kind of skip right over that and go right on to the heavy machinery.
Yeah, we should mention a few things really quickly. One, of course, that Jillian and Emmett dropped their clue, which I thought was an interesting moment. It didn't cause a ton of things to happen. And then also we had this kind of odd moment where Ashley, who seems obsessed with other threats, then, realizes Jillian and Emmett are a threat, which doesn't make sense to me that at this point it would take her this long to figure this out. But something to note in terms of the edit that we keep seeing her say these things about other teams, but just something to note. But did you have any thought that Jillian and Emmett were even in trouble with this clue issue?
It seemed like kind of a fake out. And granted, we watch these without commercials. And if I'd had the commercial break to think it over, I might have had that suspense feel like it was built up. But it was the classic, oh no, we screwed up, cut to commercial, come right back on, oh no, we screwed up. And without that little break in the middle there, it seemed pretty obvious to me that this was going to be just a temporary hiccup.
Yeah, and that is a good point about the commercials, because one, it's a little repetitive when you watch it because they show the same thing twice. But it's one of the things you have to deal with when we're not watching it on the channel that it's on in Canada. But yeah, I had a feeling too, especially given where they were. It was one, it wasn't the last task, and two, they were not in last place. So you kind of got the feeling and especially given what we had seen with a few of the teams, especially Kelly and Kate, who were nowhere near finishing the puzzle, we kind of figured this was as much just we had to add suspense here when really there wasn't that much, because most teams were in good shape and one team was not.
Yeah, pretty much. And at that point, I think there's not much you can do to make the outcome less obvious.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that, I mean, with the second roadblock, it wasn't so extreme where teams at least weren't battling it out in the second roadblock. You know, we haven't had a situation where teams, like we saw with Anna Tanya, you know, they were in it. It didn't work out, but that's kind of what happened here with what really was a good percentage of the episode. Roadblock number two, no detour, second roadblock here. So what do you think about that idea?
Well, I think given the tasks that were available to everybody, that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think it does, when they do this, they usually seem to do this more like with premieres and finales and such things like this, but it does make it interesting. And we really saw it here, obviously, with Lowell, but it makes it interesting where you have teams, maybe not always people who's not their skill set, having to do tasks that are out of their comfort zone.
Yeah. And I have to say, this brought us maybe my favorite moment of the entire episode, which was Lowell being out of his mind with glee at getting to drive the tugboat, and Julie noting he doesn't often get to operate heavy machinery.
Yeah, and this was really, I get a little feeling this kind of felt like this was like a swan song episode. Not that I thought they were going to get eliminated, but they really gave them a showpiece episode. And you could say, well, that's great because that means they're going to go really far. To me, it almost felt like they're not going to go that much further. And this was a great way to show these cool people having a great time.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like this is our slow motion clip of, like, we'll have their voiceover of, you know, Lowell wants to see the whole world before he can't see anything anymore. And we get the slow motion of him with like that big goofy grin on his face driving the tugboat. And that'll be the thing that they go out on when they talk about, You know, we've learned so much about ourselves and each other. We've really gotten to see a great chunk of the world. We'll never forget this. And, you know, here's the boat and the smile and the fade to black. Like, look, editors, I did your job for you next week when that inevitably happens.
And if they want, they can use the quote of him saying he's going to soak in the beauty before he loses his vision. You know, like, you know, just that quote is like the quotes that show up when you get eliminated. I didn't think they were going to get eliminated because, you, like we said, you kind of had a sense with Kelly and Kate that when they were struggling with the puzzle that they probably weren't going to catch up. But this stuff, it was cool, though. I mean, I don't have a problem with it, though, in this sense. One, because they weren't eliminated. But also, it's like you've got this guy doing something, like you said, I mean, operating heavy machinery, which I'm glad that he doesn't do that very often. I'd be a little concerned if he did. But getting to do something that, like, that's part of what The Amazing Race is about. You know, in theory, the idea is people getting out of their comfort zone, regular people, and doing things they would never do in their regular lives. And this was definitely that here.
Yeah. And I think that was what made this task. Like, I think it wouldn't have been as interesting to me if we didn't have that spin to put on it.
Yeah. And we saw a lot. I mean, we talked a little bit previously about how this show is really good about not showing every team doing the same thing. This task, we a bit saw every team. Like, I don't know if I needed the, okay, they've done one, now they've done two, now they've done three with each team. But I think given that we didn't have a detour this week, there was more time for this. And it's a cool task, getting to drive a tugboat and push these logs. We saw Frankie just get frustrated and just push all three at once. And that was a cool moment. They had to add like the guitars and stuff to make sure we realized that was like a rocking moment. But it did feel a little bit like, because this episode didn't have as much, we did see a lot of this task, which led to cool moments like Lowell's, but also led us to a bit more repetition.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit repetitive, although I thought there was a little extra added drama in the fact that those things rocked so much. I thought somebody was going to tip it over. I was waiting for someone to tip it over.
Well, that would have been a great cut to commercial moment, I would have seen, you know, just the whoa, and then, you know, you have the camera go out a different way or whatever, you know, because, but yeah, I wonder too if someone, like they mentioned, would get sick and throw up. I thought that was coming after our talk of throwing up last week. I was like, here we go. It's going to be Frankie. It's going to be that team. You know, they're going to be the puking team. But and I would never just call them the puking team, you know, just for their sake. But it did seem like something like that would happen. And one thing I liked about it, though, is there was more to it than just, you know, this wasn't, hey, get in a big truck, drive, and then a clue appears like we've seen in the past, or drive through some mud. They actually had to navigate, which kind of like what they said was like a maze of logs, and they had to hit the push the certain ones, the red flag. So to give them credit with this task, it was not just a, isn't it cool to drive a tugboat? There was still some skill involved, at least, which made, you know, made things a little more interesting when teams kind of did well.
Yeah, it was definitely, there was a little bit of kind of sheer muscle involved, and there was also some skill. And I think those are the best kinds of tasks, the ones that use more than one skill set.
Right. Because we saw, like with Frankie and Amy, I mean, the fact that Frankie did well, they end up in third, you know, and Emmett doing so well almost got them. I mean, I don't know how close it was, but got them, you know, much closer to Steph and Kristen than they were when the task started. So there was room to do well if you, you know, I guess this one is also Emmett's jam, this task, I think, continuing that thread. But there was an ability to make up some ground, even if it didn't really help Kelly and Kate in the end.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think, you know, Kelly and Kate, then they've gone from first place in the last leg to seventh place on this leg, and they are summarily eliminated. And I think that about wraps up all the high points of the things that happened. But we had so many questions about all of this stuff that I think we are not going to hurt for things to talk about with regard to the rest of the episode, Dan.
No, definitely. There was, you know, I know we're recording this a bit later, but people were good and jumped in and asked a bunch of questions. And again, people were good about reaching out and asking questions early on, which, you know, even the night of the show. So that was cool to kind of get those across the board from a lot of different people. So here's an interesting question right off the bat. Speaking of that, which from Anthony S. He said, I mean, I'm not sure we know this, but I think it's an interesting question. Could Kelly and Kate look at those finished puzzles? If so, should the other teams destroy theirs before leaving?
Well, that was something we saw a lot of last season, I think. Like when they had to do that big math problem on the boards and people were erasing them before they would leave. So I think they must not have been, they must have been far enough away from the other puzzles that they couldn't necessarily glean anything from looking at the puzzles. That's my thought anyway.
That's what I was thinking too, because I don't think we didn't see anything about teams having to, you know, remove their puzzle or anything. And they did seem enough spread out where, I mean, they were close enough where teams could see each other. It wasn't like they were totally in some separate clearing, but I don't think they were close enough where teams could look. And my guess is there was some sort of rule or something that said, you know, you cannot go run through the woods and find other puzzles or something, or they just, the show itself removed them once they were complete.
Yeah, I think that's very likely. So we got one question from several different people, and this keeps coming up, so we should probably address it. Everybody wants to know why we're getting these meaningful shots of Mentos.
Well, from what I can tell, this is an ongoing thing that Mentos has. They have a promotion. They're a promotional sponsor. So they are putting, they're hiding in quotes. Let's say hiding with quotes around it, hiding a Mentos in, not in the show for the racers to find. They're hiding it for us, the viewers, to find them. Like basically, and then it's like, can you spot the hidden Mentos? So that's why the camera, they'll be doing something and the camera will just, like the first episode, I think they were up on that, you know, the Skyway or whatnot, and that they had a Mentos in there that they would focus on. So now I know they're doing that each week. Is there anything more to this beyond just a promotion for Mentos though? That's where I'm not sure.
From what I understand, I think there is a contest going on with Mentos. But, you know, again, it's hard for us to tell because we don't get to watch the commercials. And believe me, Amazing Race Canada, if I had some legal way of getting the show and watching all the commercials, I would watch all the commercials and I would go to the, I would go buy the Mentos the next time in Canada, and I would, you know, rent a Chevy and use my BMO World Elite MasterCard. Or I would at least go to BMO and use my card in the machines there and give you a surcharge. So I'm just saying, you know, I would do my best to patronize all of your sponsors if I had a good legal way to get this, and I would watch all of your ads. But since we can't watch all the ads, we're a little bit in the dark on this. I do believe there is an actual Mentos promotion going on where you have to spot these meaningful shots, and I guess maybe you win some Mentos or something. And that's all I know.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of hinting at, but I wasn't sure because I hadn't done research on that side of it. But
I've got
I agree.
I found it.
I knew. Oh, yeah. Now I. Yes. Go for it.
It's called the Amazing Refresh Challenge. And you can win.
That's not a very creative name.
Yeah, there's a game that you can play. And I guess you spot the hidden Mentos and you are entered to win a trip.
Well, that's cool. I assume the trip would then include accommodations from hotels.com.
You know, they don't say, but maybe there's like a special Mentos suite wherever you go on your trip. And like the bathtub is full of Mentos and room service will refuse to deliver you a Diet Coke.
It's interesting. That's a funny joke. I like that. It took me a minute to get it, though, what you were saying. Mentos isn't advertised here nearly as much as they used to be, at least from my perspective. Or maybe I just don't watch as many commercials due to DVR. So it's interesting that they are investing so much into this show. But, you know, it's clever. And I also, hey, if I could back, if Petro-Canada was still a sponsor, I would go fill up if I could when I was in Canada. But I wouldn't know. I haven't seen all the commercials. So another pitch on that front. But it's an interesting. So what do you think? Do you think this Mentos is overdone? This thing, is it distracting us from the race at all, Jess?
I don't mind it, but I'm also intrigued by foreign candy. And, you know, granted, we have Mentos here, and I'm sure they're pretty much the same. But I'm intrigued by the brand placement. It doesn't bother me quite as much as it might in an American version of the show. But the American version of the show has tried stuff like this before, and they haven't really managed to get away with it quite as easily.
Right. Like, even, you know, we had the challenge in Canada with involving Mentos in season two. So they do find better ways. Yeah. I don't know what it is in the US version, why so much of the product placement seems so like it hits you over the head with it a little more. But this is a little more subtle. So I appreciate that. But the fact that people have to ask too shows that it's more subtle, because it would be less subtle if it was done here in the States.
Yeah, very true. All right. What do you got for questions?
Okay. So we have Muneeb Khan asks, do you think the chances for back-to-back non-elimination legs are now increased? I'm assuming he means because there were only 10 teams. He referred to like some seasons that were very good, like 3-5 and 25 of US that had that. And those actually had more teams. Season 3 actually had 12 teams. But do you think with 10 teams that there's a risk that we're going to see like several legs in a row where no one gets eliminated?
Well, I think you can get away with up to two. Like, anything more than two, it's going to be really hard to keep your audience, because the entirety of reality TV is formed around the principle of somebody's getting kicked off the show and we have to find out who. So I think you can get away with it once and surprise people. Like, oh, nobody went home last week and nobody's going home this week either. I think it becomes a harder sell after that, but I think there's the possibility they'll do it once. And it will be interesting if and only if the teams that are not eliminated are not the same teams both times.
Right. And there's also a chance they could do like a you're still racing or a non-elimination that the next week you're still racing. Right. So technically the team that had to do the speed bump is technically on the same leg. So then, like, you know, the third week someone gets eliminated. And I'll ask a follow-up myself. What is the percentage chance next week is a non-elimination?
I think we're going on like a 75-80% chance next week is a non-elimination.
Yeah, I was thinking like 90. I don't want to say 100 because there's always a chance, you know, they could drop it further. But if they eliminate somebody next week, we're already down to five teams pretty early on. And I have not checked to see. I don't really want to check exactly like the how many episodes are scheduled to air and all that, because I feel like then you kind of just can pinpoint it and that kind of removes some of the questions about it.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so we got a question from Survivor Twerks. She wants to know, do you trust the Jillian edit? Remember how shrill they made Holly seem? Is Emmett getting a pass?
You know, it's interesting because I don't really feel like, well, I mean, she is definitely being edited, in my opinion, as somebody who under pressure loses it. But he's just being edited to me as kind of boring. So it's like, I don't feel like it's one of those cases where it's like he's the really cool, great racer, interesting one, and she's bad. But and they keep going out of their way, too, to show her saying how great he is. Like, he's great at everything but being a boyfriend and all of that. But, you know, so she's the one almost propping him up. But, yeah, I think what I think it is, too, is that, you know, you've got a lot of teams that a lot of them are pretty down to earth. You've got a few that get, you know, Steph and Kristen, very focused. Joel and Ashley, you know, she might scream here and there, pretty down to earth. Frankie and Amy are just having a blast. Like they're thrilled just that every week they survive, even though they're doing well. But and Rita and Yvette kind of similar. So I look at this and I go, there isn't a lot of teams that have super drama. So they may be heightening her edit, or at least really showing when she freaks out, because they don't have much else in that zone. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I think Jillian is a fine racer. I think she does a great job. She holds her own. I haven't seen her be terrible at something. And I think that when you can't really air it if they don't say it, right? So I think we're getting every minute of that reaction that she's having. It's very similar to how Holly was edited. I think that was a really good parallel to draw, because the really interesting thing about Brett and Holly, when they are out of the pressure cooker and they're just like hanging out in the world, there is an intense one in that couple, and it's not Holly.
No, and we saw that from the when they were on the podcast, yes, that you did with them, where one person tended to dominate the conversation a bit. But yeah, I think that's true, because we even talked about this last season with Dijon and Leilani, more in terms of fighting, because they kept talking about how they were fighting all the time, and we never really saw it. And we kept both saying, well, if they even if they fought for 5 minutes, I mean, it was more a setup for how they went out, we eventually realized. But if they had been fighting a lot, we would have seen every minute of it. And I think that's the case, because we've seen Tass, like when they ate the bugs, where she basically, you know, I thought, oh, she's going to freak out. She said, let's do it. They blew through it. That was it. So it's not every Tass, but when she does a roadblock and struggles, or the time when they were trying, you know, to pull in the boat and everything, and the coconut task, basically, they're going to show it, because also they're a strong team and they want to show cracks.
Yeah, that's true, because what is their story if they're just going to dominate?
Yeah, it becomes like if it was two Emmets, it'd be like, I did the task. And I don't mean to make him too boring. I still think he has a little more personality than the Gino Jesse last season. And we're so tough. Gino and Jesse, really nice guys, gracious winners, seem like cool people, probably nice guys to have a beer with, just not great on TV. He kind of seems similar, I think. I don't think he's not what I expected when I heard Big Brother contestant on The Amazing Race. He seems like a good competitor and a decent guy, but he's not like dramatic. He's a competitor who puts his head down and does the task. That's not always what I mean. I don't feel like this version of The Amazing Race, they're as focused on drama, but they still want to have teams kind of lose it here and there.
I'm just loving the visual of like Emmett and Ebbett running the race together. Like John Montgomery, Emmett and Ebbett, you are team number one.
Well, thanks, John. We just try and give 110% every time, and we want to get first. When we get second, we're disappointed, but we know it's going to work out.
I thought Emmett did a really good job on the roadblock. And I thought Emmett did a really good job on the other roadblock.
Yeah, it's just, they just, you know, next season there's going to be a team like that. And they're going to be like, they were paying attention. They read it wrong, what we were saying. They thought we wanted that. All right, let's go to another question. Okay. We could veer off for a while here. Tanya asked, with all the help in this episode, are there ever times when not helping will hurt you in the game?
That's an interesting question. That's something I think that's really an interesting point to ponder. Because I think there are times when you helping a team is the difference between not necessarily that team not getting eliminated, but I think it pays dividends in the end. If you and another team work together, especially on one of these things where you all have to come up with the same answer and you're really not good at it, I think working together with another team can only help you. But I'm not sure it's necessarily something you absolutely have to do.
Right, because like we saw last season, Simeon Ope, like he was not someone who really, he's like, we're doing our own thing. They can all work together. And times I think it helped them, and then at times they fell behind. So it's so much about recognizing when it's going to work for you. Or we saw the one in the US version, Jason and Amy, who basically pulled Travis and Nicole to the finals. But Jason and Amy won, and the other team fell apart. So you're like, well, maybe that was good that they did that. So, you know, there's different ways to look at it. But I also think, though, to kind of to answer a question at a specific time, it's also, too, like I mentioned with Amy, it's how you approach it, too. You have to be careful, because if someone asks for help and you like act weird or shady or make up some of the wrong story or do something that's completely unnecessary, it could end up hurting you with a U-turn, which we haven't seen the U-turn. So I wonder how much of that's going to play this season, but, or, you know, even in a rare case with someone giving you an express pass when it was gone, but You may want to try and help, but again, it has to be, you don't want to overly help when it's not going to benefit you. Like this week, I felt like it did. Lowell and Julie did get some help back from Juliet and Emmett later. I don't think either them helping or not being helped affected the final result. But in that case, it did benefit them a little. But then we saw earlier the season where Stefan basically just kind of torpedoed his game by helping somebody. So you got to watch it.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think especially in the case of Julie and Lowell, they have an extra incentive to be helpful at this point in the race. Because I think there may come a point where there's a roadblock and, you know, Lowell gets stuck doing the roadblock and it's something he really is struggling with. And someone he helped before may help him out.
Yeah, that's a good point, because even the tugboat thing was a challenge for him, but it was daytime and he had a hard time seeing the flag, but he did it. But you never know. I mean, I think the show has tried not to, you know, I think, we talked about they designed the tasks already before they cast him, but I don't feel like the tasks thus far have included a lot that he just couldn't do, period. But you never know. It may come, because tasks tend to get harder on this show, the Canadian version. When you get down to five or six, if they can get through a few times, it's going to get tough. And who's to say what's going to come, especially if it's at night?
Yeah, I think that's a fair concern. And also, like, if you think about this, like, say, Dan, you and I are a team on the race and we are at a roadblock. You're doing the roadblock. And there's one team behind us, like we're there, Julian Lowell there. There's one more team behind us. That team is Jillian and Emmett. You're going to help Lowell get that roadblock done, right? Because you want to get rid of the stronger team.
Right. And that's another thing where, in a sense, it might benefit Julian Lowell, benefit possibly by also being really well liked and being not considered threats. And right now, I think that's both those things are true. So it comes up with the U-turn, but it also just comes up with tasks. So somebody who would look at the strategy of it, you would think there's no way we're helping them, which is why I was so kind of curious how they helped Jillian this week. Cause my thought would be, you know, I guess at the final seven, maybe you're not thinking that way. My thought would be, I'm not helping that team, because not because they're mean or I don't like them, but because they're a threat. And it would probably happen the same way with Steph and Kristen.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true. And maybe even Joel and Ashley, when you think about it.
Yeah, because they are a team that, you know, they were fourth this week, but just barely, I think. But they are very solid racers, and solid racers that have not been in any danger of being eliminated at all. And those types of team are teams that end up in the final three. And I mentioned this a little earlier, judging on performance and on editing, I know nothing about the finale. I'm going to predict right now the final three is Stephen, Kristen, Jillian and Emmett, and Joel and Ashley. And I know this is like the least sticking my neck out anyone could ever do. Like, it's like, okay, pick the three obvious ones. But even just the way they're being presented and the way they're being edited and the way she's talking about other threats, one of these three could get knocked out at a four or five. But I don't know. It's just, I look at it and I'm having a hard time picturing any of the other teams in the final three.
I like this. I like this scenario. I think that's got legs.
Yeah, so don't hold me to it. I'm not trying to spoil it. If anyone's seen the show, the season so far, you have to have a similar feeling. But I just want to put it on the record, because by doing this, of course, I will ensure that one of those three teams is eliminated next week. So I'm just doing it now, because after we raved about Kelly and Kate, and the week before we had raved about Stefan and Antoine, we are just sending these teams through time travel to their doom.
It's true. We're like retroactively cursing them, aren't we?
Pretty much. So do you have another question here?
Yep, I've got one loaded up. This is also kind of quasi-related to the guessing, to the collaboration that's been going on. We got a lot of questions about that, actually, but I thought this is an interesting one that I think we can try to clarify a rule point. But James Ong wants to know, didn't Julie and Rita kind of miss the point of cooperating on the totem roadblock? I.e., each racer should take three stories, then share. Clearly it wasn't done. You can see them listening together.
Right. And that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, which came from his question. But it does seem like, you know, like we've seen this when they have to do flags or whatnot, where teams are, you know, or something where teams will say, you count these, you count these, you count these. And I think that was the case here. In this case, I feel like maybe they all, even though they talked about doing it together, it could have had to do with edit where they all kind of went through it and then they were all like struggling so much that then they all just thought, well, maybe if we all listen, someone will hear. To me, it's a poor approach strategically, but I feel like maybe we didn't see everything that happened on the show.
My guess on that was that they were probably compelled by the rules or some other, or even just Canadian politeness, to listen to every single one of the stories. Like, I don't think they were allowed to split them up like that.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And also that you can't do a case where you listen to four and then you just keep guessing the other two until you're right. That's interesting. They probably did have to actually go and listen to each one in order to do it. That's that. I think that has legs, as you said earlier.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most logical scenario, because otherwise it would have been like, yeah, you take three, I'll take three. Or, you know, get a third, recruit a third person in there. You take two, I'll take two, she'll take two. And that seems like that's more collaboration than the race would really want.
Yeah, in a sense, it's almost like skipping part of the task. The task is the memorizing, but part of the task is just the time it takes to listen to all the stories.
Right.
It's almost like that's part of it. It's like if you're kayaking down a river, then you have to grab a clue off a rope. Listening to the stories is kayaking down the river. The other part is it's a really stupid way to compare it, but you know, it's basically that connection is how it works. So this is just an interesting question to me, this next one here. It seems like an obvious question, but I'm curious just here. It's basically Ruloville says, why is finishing first on a lake so valued besides getting the trip? Is it a badge of honor?
I think it must be. And I think there are some teams that, you know, if you don't maintain that competitive edge, you really lose momentum. So the teams that are really in it for that first place finish, I think most of them are aware at this point, because Amazing Race has been on the air for 16 years now. Everybody knows this, that first place on a random leg doesn't really mean anything in the end, except that you have that mentality, you can finish first place on a leg. It's not just the Amazing Race to not be last.
Right. And it is, you know, it's, I think a lot of it has to do with the competitive nature, because generally the people that they cast on this show, regardless of what they do for a living or how athletic they are, they have to be competitive enough to want to deal with the jet lag and the lack of sleep and the weird eating and everything. I don't mean weird eating like eating bugs. I just mean you're off your schedule or something. So you got to be competitive to a point. And then also, too, it does, part of it a little bit is getting the trip or getting something. But it's one of those things where even if you tell yourself, oh, it's okay if I'm third or fourth, it's really hard, as for most personalities, for me, it would be hard, because then I would think, well, I don't know where anybody is. I'm going to shoot for the top because who knows what can happen or something like that. And then also it is the mentality. We've seen a few teams that, you know, finished second over and over and over and then got first. But a lot of times once you've won, you kind of go, okay, especially for teams that maybe aren't the obvious alpha super athletic teams, I think it's really important for them to win a leg. Because then it's like they beat, like, let's say, you know, if Kelly and Kate had actually gone further, they got first. Even Joel and Ashley now finished first once, so they can finish fourth now and not think, well, we'll never beat Steph and Kristen. There's no possible way we can beat Julian and Emmett. They've done it. So that might also be in terms of the mentality you have to take.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I think you have to know that you can win a leg before you get to the last leg. And, you know, it's not mandatory. There's plenty of teams that go on to win the whole thing without winning a leg, but it really can't hurt.
Yeah. And then there's the flip side, though, that you have teams have to be careful of, I would think, in getting so obsessed with first that when you start to fall down or fall backwards or being near the top, that instead of finishing fourth, you freak out that you're not at the top and you finish seventh or something. You know, there's that we've seen before, or where a team wins four legs and then all of a sudden gets eliminated. And you're like, what? It's just that there is something about teams that do well like that, though, and are really near the top, they got to be careful that they don't get too obsessed with it.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely with you on that. And that was something you saw, I think, especially on those old school seasons that we love so much. You would have those teams that didn't quite catch that it didn't really matter whether they got first on every leg or not. And then when they didn't get first on a leg, it was like the world had ended.
Yeah, and then the audience, as a viewer, I'm just like, oh, that team, that's it. You're done. Yep. You know, and then they have those confessionals where they're like, you know, interviews or whatever you want to call them, and they're like, we've got to do better. We only finished third. It's like, okay, guys, you know, settle down. Teams like that usually don't win the race. I mean, there's exceptions, but they usually end up getting to the finals and then losing.
Right.
Or something. Or finishing fifth. So, you know, there's that to it. What other do we have other questions, Jess?
You know, we had a few, but I think we've covered all the high points for sure.
Yeah, I did want to say I was thrilled that Steph and Kristen did not spend the whole season being the Nick and Matt of the season and talking about how they didn't finish first. They have finished first. They get a trip to New York City.
Yeah, that's exciting. Was a question I got. I got a question. I think it was Evan who asked this, and I thought it was really funny. Yeah, he wanted to know if I'm going to hang out with them when they come to New York City. And I will say they're probably going to be here, definitely not in the next 2 months. So I'm going to be a little bit busy. I'm going to have my hands full. But if they want to get at me, I will be happy to recommend any kind of restaurants or attractions or anything they want to do here. I'm a treasure trove of New York City tourist information.
You don't think they're going to come by and see the baby or something?
If they want to babysit, I'm totally down for that too.
And the only other thing I noticed I want to mention is the Frankie, Amy, Joel, and Ashley run for the mat rivalry that we've had 2 weeks in a row, which I really enjoy quite a bit.
Yeah, that's entertaining. They can keep doing that.
It's just so rare to see even two teams arrive at the same time and to have it. And not like when they're running for like last, when they're right in the middle of the pack, they're not running for first. They're third and fourth and fifth. And it's like, oh, this is kind of fun. You know, they're having this little battle. I think Frankie and Amy are enjoying it more than Joel and Ashley, but it's cool.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, but okay. It's fun. We'll see what happens.
I guess we will. All right. So, a few administrative notes, guys. Once again, we get many people asking, can you send me a link to watch Amazing Race Canada? Because I'm not Canadian. How do I watch Amazing Race Canada? And the answer is there are many ways you could do it. There are a lot of strategies you can employ. And the best way to see where all these strategies are in one convenient place is become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. And patrons get access to a special patron-only Facebook group where you can see, in the files section, a big long list of all the ways I know of that you can watch this show when you yourself are not in Canada. If you don't want to do that, there's lots of ways you can help out the podcast. We have Amazon.com referral links on the site, and you can also just help us out by leaving reviews in the iTunes store or leaving comments for us. And the comments are really just for our morale. But we love it. We love hearing from you. We love your feedback. We love your questions after you've watched the episode. All of those things are great. You can go to robhaswebsite.com, scroll down to Reality Rehap-Ups, find the episode, leave us your comments there. And you can also tweet at us. That's an easy way to get in touch with us. You could tweet at me, at Haymaker Hattie.
And I'm at the Dan Heaton, and I've really been enjoying getting all the tweets, even before I see the episode. You know, I don't look at them that closely, but I read them all. And even if we don't get to your questions, we try to get to as many as we can, and we love getting them.
Yeah, we've been really thriving on the amount of great feedback we've been getting. And honestly, when I get those notifications right after Amazing Race Canada has ended, all of you Canadians hop on there and start asking your questions, I get more excited to see the episode because I want to know what you're all talking about. And so I jump on it right away.
Yeah, and especially last week, I felt like people were really psyched about the episode. This week was good. People liked it. But I think you could really sense how good last week was even before I watched it.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we probably need a hashtag for this episode. And I wasn't really thinking about it over the course of our wonderful conversation because I was just enjoying the flow of the conversation. So, Dan, do you have anything?
What about The two Emmets, or Emmett and Emmett.
That was what I was thinking we should go with, Emmett and Emmett. So go ahead and tweet us with the hashtag Emmett and Emmett if you got all the way to the end of this podcast. All right. So I guess with all of that, we will sign off for the week. Thank you all for being patient with us as we got our acts together to finally record the podcast. And thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.